Jeff Merrick, this show exists, if nothing else, than to educate the masses when it comes to all things hockey.
Oh,
so I ask you, sir, this question. Do you know what a sundog is?
I saw your North Dakota story. No, what is a sundog?
All right, well, you're playing along, but clearly you've read the story. You know what a sundog is, because I didn't know what a sundog was before I wrote the story. Sundog, if you don't know, is one of the five choices for the name that will replace Fighting Sioux for the new North Dakota nickname. And a sundog are the colorful halos on the sides of the sun as its rays are beamed through ice crystals in the sky. That's a sundog.
You know me, I kind of go lo-fi on these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't I just call it North Dakota Green? Just take a color.
That's pretty great.
Honestly, why don't you just take a color? Like it removes, because you're not going to get any consensus on either, you know, Sundog or North Stars, whatever name you end up going with. But who can not like the North Dakota Green?
I think that's an interesting choice. The more I think about this mascot thing, the more it appears that maybe it actually is sort of motivated by the fact that we need to sell Beanie Babies. And we need to sell T-shirts with a colorful mascot.
Just have a green grimace. Instead of a purple grimace, you have a green grimace. What is it? I don't know. It's fucking grimace. But he's green. Now, drop the puck.
I think there's probably a reason Grimace wasn't green, and that's the sense that they're trying to sell food.
Oh, yeah, right. It's bad color to sell
and
food.
Yeah, because there's nothing better than seeing a giant blob that obviously only eats McDonald's walking around bright green. That's really not selling a lot of burgers.
Okay. All right, gotcha. That one, then.
Sundog is one of the choices. Alas, it doesn't appear like it's the most popular choice of the five.
Take Rough Riders. Up here in Canada, it's the greatest punchline of all time. Take Rough Riders. Take Rough Riders.
I don't know if there's any kind of copyright infringement with the CFL on that one. It remains to be seen. But the point of it is this, and this is why I wrote about it this morning. And I've written about the Fighting Sioux issue for years, and I've covered these issues for years. Back in the days when I wrote for the Connection newspapers in Northern Virginia, and teams named the Warriors were getting grief for their names and their iconography. Mm-hmm. All that stuff, the Native American stuff, to me is a debate settled in the Fighting Sioux case. The Fighting Sioux people have lost. You know, the people who don't want that nickname or find that nickname to be abhorrent of one amongst those people is the NCAA. And once the NCAA says, hey, you're risking sanction if you keep this nickname, then essentially the argument's over. You're boned. So that aside, it's so clear that these poor bastards in North Dakota who have nothing else but this school and an Olive Garden. Like, all they want to do is just get this, just call it North Dakota. They've called it North Dakota or UND since the Fighting Sioux name was stripped away from them.
Yeah.
And for as part of the agreement, they have to come up with a new mascot. I think there's obviously ways around that. You can call them the University of North Dakota UND and just, like you said, invent what a UND is. I mean, you could do any number of different things, but like
that was like the idea. Before they became the Charlottetown Islanders, they're going to call themselves the PEI Islanders, the Prince Edward Island Islanders. No, 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 no.
Wow,
stop.
That's messed.
Thank you.
The point is though is that the people who are pushing for it just to be North Dakota are obviously doing it because they don't believe there's ever any replacing Fighting Sioux. So my question to you is, look into the pensive here and look into the future for a second, if you will. Or was the pensive for the past? I forget. Point is this. 20 years from now, they're the Rough Riders for 20 years. Is it still going to be that? Or are we still going to feel bitter? Or is this a very specific generational thing? Every change in sports is a very sort of specific in the now thing. And then 20 years later, people don't even really talk about it anymore as a great injustice.
100% true. 100% true. For right now, no one will call it that. Like, let's say it's the Rough Riders. They won't be called that. They'll still be called, amongst the fans, the Fighting Sioux.
Right.
They still will, for all the fans.
And everybody will wear that gear to games. Yeah.
Yeah, and time has a way of washing that all out. Mm-hmm. Right? Eventually, those T-shirts fade, and then there has to be a new one to replace it in the closet. That's just a honestly, I just think that's a generational thing, and it fades out.
Now, you're a curmudgeon, but you can also be very progressive at times, and I wonder what your thoughts are on the Blackhawks name. The Blackhawks seem to get dragged into this conversation now and again as far as offensive names, offensive iconography, everything of that nature. Do you subscribe to that theory? Do you think that they should be evaluated, or do you think that the Blackhawks are something separate than maybe something that would be a bit more offensive?
Haven't we talked about this before? That was Frederick McLaughlin, who was the original owner of the team. Wasn't that his military unit, and that's what it was a tribute to?
Right, but I mean,
if I'm not mistaken. I guess the argument has always been, you know, not in any sort of demeaning way, but in more of a proud way. You know, I have in a lot of ways, you know, more of a hard time with the Fighting Irish than a lot of other ones, and that seems to somehow have escaped the news. You
think it's offensive that the Fighting Irish is represented by a fucking leprechaun looking to punch someone in the face? You think that's offensive to anybody who's Irish?
No, it couldn't be. Not a chance. No way. No.
But that's a fun one, though. That's not a genocide one. That's a difference. It's a fun one. Listen, I mean, people are always like, the issue eventually devolves into, get rid of any real life thing as a mascot. Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough one for me because obviously I'm not in the community. I can't really speak to it. And the people in the community have been of different minds. I've talked to people in the Native American community about this issue for years. Some of them say it's offensive. Some of them say it's not. They don't care about it. They care. And a lot of them, to be honest with you, because I was in Virginia at the time when I was doing these stories, by and large, a lot of them say, you know what? I really don't have a problem with warriors because that's kind of like putting us over. But that Redskins thing.
That's the worst one. Honestly, I still do not understand how that hasn't been remedied. That's the one to me that I'm still like, I look at my calendar, like I look at the NFL standing and say, what year is this? There's a team called the Redskins in the NFL, the world's largest, America's largest sports league.
Yeah.
In 2015, that still exists. Here's the way I look at it. And I look at it, I'm starting to look at sports like this as well in a lot of ways. If there wasn't the history attached to it, if you just presented it at a marketing meeting today, would it get royal assent? Would it fly? Like if Chicago Blackhawks, you know, weren't a team, you know, going back to 25, 26, somewhere in that era. If it wasn't a team that stretched back to the 20s and it just started today, and this was the marketing campaign that some marketing genius came up with, would it fly? Would anyone say, yeah, you know what? Let's go with that one.
It wouldn't fly the way it has. What it would be is the alternative Blackhawks logo that I've seen some people make. Great Blackhawks fans. I mean, this isn't trying to demonize anybody here. There's a group of Blackhawks fans who really don't like the logo, as iconic as it is. They came up with an alternative to the logo, which is a bird. But the bird is fashioned in a way where it almost looks like the Indian head logo, except instead of an Indian head, it's a bird, and it's Blackhawks. And from that aspect, I think that's what we'd see. Because Blackhawks is an awesome name. Let's be honest here. It's a great name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got Blackhawk helicopters, black is, you know, whatever. Yeah. So I think they would end up doing a bird instead of doing a person. Is what they'd end
up doing. Do you look at sports the way that I just presented branding? Like if hockey, as we know it right now,
yeah,
entered the sports universe today, what would we think? And ditto for football. If it just started today, or boxing, if it just started today, what would the outcry be? You're going to do what? There's going to be a little puck on ice, 10 people in a confined place with hard boards that are allowed to hit each other with weapons and their bodies?
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is a sport. This is what you're proposing.
Like, how are they getting around on the ice?
Sharp knives. I've always wondered, could hockey just start today? Could hockey have been invented today?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I think it could. But I think the real question is, how farther would it be pushed? Because if you're just a sport starting today, You can't be pedestrian. You can't just be hockey if you started today. It'd have to be extremed up. There would be spikes on the end of the sticks. One side would be a blade, and the other side would be like a sword.
Yeah.
I don't know. I go back and forth. I go back and forth on it with football. Like which I mean, I guess UFC is the obvious touchstone, but man, that had its battles as well, and it's still not sanctioned in New York. But I mean, if you're coming up with a sport today, how violent is it allowed to be? Given the nature of all that we know about concussions and injuries and such and the long-term effects of those things, how violent a sport would you be able to invent today, to start today?
I think it could be as violent as you want as long as you give the appearance of caring about the safety of the athletes.
Do you think there's anyone out there?
That's the real issue with a lot of this stuff.
Do you think that there's anyone out there that would be willing to take that risk, knowing the potential for lawsuit?
No. I don't. And
like, where once upon a time it's like, hey, man, we just came with this new sport. Yeah, go, guys, play. And now we're going to charge a couple bucks.
Yeah.
Then, you know, lawyers come in, which always makes things better.
If hockey started today, here's exactly what I think would happen, for real.
Would there be contact?
There would be contact. There would be full face shields.
Correct.
But transparent.
I believe that too. Yep.
And it would look like Cobra Commander. That's a reference lost on you, but it would look like the Cobra Commander helmet, except clear. So in other words, it wouldn't be like the full face shield that we see.
So it'd be like a full, like those old full face shield. Well, I guess no older still make them. The full iTech face shields.
You would have to be able to see the full face of the player. But okay. It would be totally covered. The nets would be larger, substantially.
Yep. See, it's such an interesting exercise. I go through my brain on this one constantly when it comes to hockey. If it started today, what would it look like? Because, you know, you're weighed down by the history and the heritage of the 200x85, and it's a 5-on-5 game, and these blue lines go here, and the center line goes here, and we allow these things to happen in these areas. If you weren't burdened by that and just created hockey right now, you know, this is why, you know, in the 70s, whether it was, you know, basketball or hockey with the WHA, you know, it was an exciting time because in some ways the game was getting redone. Mm-hmm. The game, I mean, the basis of the rules were all pretty much the same, but the vibes were different. If you could change not just the vibes of the game, but the actual game itself, what would hockey look like if you just started it today?
I'll give you another one. Ready?
All right.
It would not feature a puck, because what is a puck? No one knows.
Something Art Ross created in the 20s.
They don't even make ring dings anymore, really. Why would they make pucks? Okay?
Okay.
What it would be is a rubber ball. The knob of the stick would be a net, and it would be lacrocky or lacrosse.
Lacrosse.
I guarantee that. Just to branch out, it would increase the scoring.
Well,
you get a net on one end of the stick,
yeah,
you get a blade on the other, you could score either way. Maybe you could do a thing where the blade, if you score a hockey goal, it's like extra points versus lacrosse shot.
Well, you just sent Canada into an orgasmic frenzy because those are the two official sports.
Rob Shrimp just flooded the street.
I'm back, baby, like a vertebrae. Rob Shrimp, yo.
Rob, wake up. They just invented lacrocky.
What?
Tell the Gate Brothers that they're in business.
The Gate. Oh, that's a hip pull. Good for you, man. Yeah, wow, the Gate Brothers. Wow. Okay.
Oh, well, it's growing up in America, you had tangential knowledge of some sports. You could always drop a Pele. You could always drop a Gate Brothers.
Yeah, that's right. Go Colorado.
Greg LeMond.
Yep. You always had your one. And Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, that guy. That guy that would be on Sports Channel once a year when they played your team.
Yeah, out in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
that's good. Lacrocky. Ooh, I'm down with that. I like
yeah,
the sound
so that's,
of that.
Yeah, that'd be a thing. Sorry the phone's ringing, by the way. I'm actually at my parents' house, and I don't know how to
answer
the ringer.
Oh, answer it. See what it is.
My parents are on all those lists to not get calls from telemarketers, and yet they still always get calls from telemarketers. I don't know what that's about. Find a way around
I thought you'd be able to opt out of that one. They got him out.
Yeah, I don't know.
One call.
Oh, by the way, sad news to pass along. If you listened to the previous podcast or one of the previous podcasts recently, in where I talked about my dad going to Hogs and Heifers in New York.
No, don't say it.
The country bar.
Yeah, it's a
what do you think? All right, what is? No, don't say it. Where do you think I'm going with this?
That it's gone. That it's been shut down.
It
no longer shares oxygen with us.
I regret to inform all fans of dive bars involving bikers that, as was passed along by, who's passed it along? One of our readers passed it along, or listeners, and I'm having trouble finding it. Yeah, closed. Or it's going to close in August.
So you guys going to go for the big celebration? There used to be a place on Lakeshore that I used to love going to, right near the Palace Pier, called John Duck's Tavern. It was an old school, one of those places that, you know, it wasn't old school. It was from the school they burned down to build the old school.
Oh, you know who it was? I'm sorry. It was Emily St. Germain. I knew it was
Emily.
It was
Emily, of course.
Yeah, Emily St. Germain passed that along, who was, of course, a longtime fan of the show and attender of parties. Yeah, Hogs and Heifers.
They did at my place is for the final night, they went back to their original prices. This was like nickel draft.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's
why brilliant. Not? I'd gone out of business. What the hell?
Hogs and Heifers is closing in August because their rent is going up to $60,000 a month in the meatpacking district. And
how much?
$60,000 a month.
Good
I had to be
Lord.
The one to break the info to my dad, and he looked his first reaction was, I gotta find a way to get there this weekend, and then the second reaction was, I wonder what's going to happen to all the stuff on the walls. Like, as if this pack rat doesn't have enough shit in his house. I'm just going to go and start pulling St. Pauli girl signs off the walls at the Hogs and Heifers. No, all right. Speaking of money, changing hands and franchising, if you will.
Oh,
great
nice.
Transition.
Nice slide.
The biggest hockey thing that happened since our last show was, of course, NHL expansion deadline coming and going, and only they sent out 16 applications. 16 applications went out from the National Hockey League to potential expansion owners,
yep.
And they got two back. Now, on the one hand, that's expected. I mean, the entire reason that you're establishing a deadline for expansion is because you're trying to weed out the places mm-hmm. you think are just in it to pay lip service to some, you know, pursuit they don't actually have their heart or their wallet in.
Yeah.
So that's part of it, is that it did what it's supposed to do. But on the other hand, like, when you've clearly been a league on the rise, and you've clearly been a league that is expanding exponentially and, you know, financially and multi-billion-dollar industry and everything going the way that it's gone for the NHL, and you only have two people willing to ante up $2 million of non-refundable money to apply for a franchise... It's a little embarrassing.
At the same time, though, too, like, billionaires don't become billionaires by frittering away $2 million, right? Like, I know people go, oh, man, it's only $2 million, but hang on a second. Well, to these guys, like, honestly, they don't achieve the place in their life unless they, you know, squeeze the beaver on the nickel till she squeals. They don't just throw around $2 million like, hey, let's just, what the hell, on a lark,
oh,
right?
Canada.
Thank you. That's my little Canadiana moment for all you Americans down there. Squeezes the beaver on the nickel till she squeals, son. Huh? Cheapskate, eh? Huh? You know it. Throws nickels around like manhole covers. Reading the NHL's press release didn't have this sort of undercurrent of we are so pissed off right now that we went through a few years ago all that realignment. Okay, sending Columbus and Detroit. We went through that entire realignment where we have two divisions of eight, two divisions of seven. The two and seven are both in the Western Conference. Like, you don't do that unless you know down the road that you have two more ready in the West. And did it not seem as if everything was lining up for Las Vegas and Seattle? Now, not to say that Seattle doesn't get into the mix somewhere down the road, but didn't it seem like the NHL was convinced that something would happen in Seattle?
Completely. And by the way, Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times is going to join us, and he's written extensively about this and really wanted to get, as my old friend Jimmy Patterson used to say, a pro from Dover on the air today to talk about the issues involving Seattle, because I'm baffled. I'm really baffled. On the one hand, I get it. Like,
no rink.
Okay. Well,
no
rink. That's the thing. I mean, like Vegas, the only two places that have buildings and funding applied. Kansas City has a building. They don't have an owner. Other places have a building. They don't have an owner. Like, that's the issue. The one place that they have multiple owners, apparently, but no buildings, didn't apply. Now, so we'll talk to Jeff about this, too, but your theory on this, I'd like to hear. You mentioned you think they can get back in. I think they can get back in, too. But that release from the NHL was so snarky about them not getting their shit in order. And all I could think of when I read that part about, like, you know, or maybe they don't have an arena and they thought they could, you know, that all I could think about when I read that part of the release was, but you guys set the timeline. Like, you've been working Seattle for three, four years, okay? You know what the deal is. You know that Hansen's got the rights to build for an NBA team. There ain't going to be an NBA team coming. You got to convince the city to build for a hockey team. So unless the NHL is convinced that the local money is never going to be there for a hockey-first arena, that's one aspect of it. If not, why did you decide to establish an artificial deadline that could potentially squeeze Seattle out of the process?
Yep. No, I know. It was pretty fast. This was a pretty quick process. And again, we'll ask our guest here in a couple of seconds when he comes on, but does it not seem to you as if what the NHL wanted to happen by setting this deadline was to light a fire under the deal they probably want more than anyone else, the Coleman Hansen deal?
It's going to be 9 minutes.
Oh, thanks, Sam.
I deserve that one.
I don't know if that went out of the air, but it's going to be 9 minutes from Sam.
No, I said that about Sam.
Is that you?
I said
damn good impression of Sam there a little bit.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I'm a master impressionist, really.
No, we've established that on the podcast, so it's certainly true.
No, I'm with you, and I don't know. It's frustrating because they clearly want to go there.
Here's what shocks me about it. If you look at the MO of Gary Bettman through, you know, the best way to sort of judge how he conducts himself from a business point of view is what happens when there's a lockout and we see the strategy that the commissioner uses. And the one thing that Gary never does is he never puts himself in a situation where he doesn't know the outcome. That's what really surprised me about this one. Mm-hmm. That's what, because I have a hard time believing that Gary Bettman put this deadline in place and didn't have some idea that Victor Coleman and Chris Hansen were going to get together and get this thing done and put pressure to get the arena built before an NBA team came in.
Right.
You know, because you know how all these guys talk, right? This is like, okay, you're going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and this is going to move over here, and and next thing you know, we're going to announce this process for taking bids for expansion franchises, and you will represent Seattle. That's why I'm surprised about this one.
Everything has proceeded exactly as I have foreseen it.
But it does with Gary. Like, you have to say that. Like, whether it's, you know, whether it's Board of Governors votes, whatever it is, and you see it all the time in lockouts. Gary never enters the room where there's a vote until he knows exactly what the vote is going to be.
Right.
One of the reasons why he's been so successful. That's what surprised me about this one.
But so maybe it's not a surprise. Maybe they know that Seattle's just never going to work. Like they'll never.
I don't know about never. That's why I still think that Seattle, there will be a team in Seattle.
No. Don't misunderstand. I think they think Seattle can work, but they want the arena where they want it. Like, they don't want the arena. They don't want Canada, right?
No.
They want
No.
That's not to say that the neighboring city, whose name escapes me, is going to be that. But, like, the arena that's being discussed is prime real estate. It's in the city. It's where they want it. It's demographically what they want. It's everything they want is in that facility. And if they can't get it, maybe they don't want to go. So the other question I had for you about this whole thing is, do you really think they want to expand to Quebec City? Do you think they want a team in Quebec City?
I don't think that there's a strong appetite for it. No, especially now with the Canadian dollar is 77 cents. Bad timing. Right. Bad timing right now for Quebec. 77 cents. Do we want to go through this? So your revenues are all in Canadian. Your expenses are all in American. Do we want to go through this again?
Good news for Aspen or Boulder when that team relocates to Colorado in 5 years.
Oh, man, that's harsh. Oh, that's snug. I think the front burner for them is getting two Western Conference American franchises in the NHL. To me, it's Vegas and Seattle. But now, now they've gone down the road.
Yeah.
Right? Now they have these two cities that have business plans that have been sitting in a desk drawer for months collecting dust. Now they've been dusted off and they'll be presented to the NHL.
I don't think
I don't see any way they can say no to Quebec.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think that they could turn down that money. Like, if you have the opportunity right now where two entities are looking to pay you $500 million for the chance to own a team, and they're in places that you're okay with. I mean, you're okay with Vegas. You think it could work there, maybe. They've at least done the legwork to make you feel like it could work there. And Quebec's got its challenges. Got its challenges demographically. It's got its challenges economically.
You could say it has its challenges with ownership. When you look at, you know, Pierre-Carl Peladeau, the leader of the Parti Québécois. Now, he will not be the face of all this. You'll see a lot of, you know, former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, thank you very much. But still, it's Quebecois.
Yeah, and I wonder what the situation is going to be like for, you know, if we talk about Montreal as the place where French language players don't want to play. Oh, boy.
I was just there, homie.
Yeah, and?
Nice rink on the inside. Don't judge. By the way, when you see the Videotron, don't judge it based on the appearance from the outside, because it's not great to look at. Inside it's lovely, but outside it's it ain't pretty.
Jeff, Sam, did you say Jeff's there?
I absolutely did not. No.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you did.
Yeah, we had some audio bleeding in our ears. I think it went from.
Sorry about that. Listen. There's a part of me that thinks there's absolutely no way that they're ever going to turn down the expansion money that'll be on the table from these two places. There's also a part of me that knows they'd rather do Seattle than Quebec City. And there's another part of me. I have a lot of parts. Another part of me that says to myself, Gary Bettman's given the NHL an out throughout this entire process, not by not committing to expansion. They've committed to the process. They've committed to the investigation. They've committed to the application process and all that jive. But I've always felt like, you know, they have a kill switch. And the kill switch is
no expansion.
If we've opened up this process and the people that we want to come to our exclusive club aren't banging on the door, we don't have to expand. And I'm not saying this is the case with Quebec City, because it's obviously going to be a very solid hockey market for the NHL. That said, they're a little bit like that tangential friend of yours that invites him or herself to hang out, but you don't really want to hang out with them. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, my aunt's sick and, she's real sick. And you're not going out tonight.
Hang on. We have someone's audio bleeding through, and he's talking about a coffee and a donut and a BLT. What?
Is this going over the air?
I don't know. Can anyone hear this? This is not surprising. It's obviously someone talking off air, but we have the line and it's coming.
Twitter people, please tell us if we can hear this.
Please tell us on Twitter if this is going out off the air.
I really hope so.
I really hope so. I really hope so.
Yeah. Is it good? No. Oof, you don't want that humidity.
Oh, yeah, you don't want that humidity. Hey, yeah. Sam, can we lose that audio? Can we, like, do our show?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Right. It's good. It's good. Yeah.
Let's just repeat what this guy's saying.
It's good. No, it's a good Saskatoon kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Who is this?
Yeah? All right. Oh.
Someone just saying, yeah, Peter knows him.
No one on Twitter is letting us know if they can hear me. We might be just talking to each other like maniacs right now.
It's someone who's doing an interview with someone by the name of Rod.
Jonah Carey is on the phone. That used to be Jonah Carey's podcast.
Blue Jays Trades.
Podcast theme song. Now I'm hearing myself.
The best Merrick? Podcast about. Hey man, don't even. I'm here. Can you hear me?
But I'm hearing myself like super echo.
Oh yeah, it's great. You know,
oh,
I can understand.
Dude, everybody on Twitter says they couldn't hear it.
Oh, too bad. It was someone who was obviously in another studio who was using one of our lines, and that audio was bleeding through. Oh, now I've got major echo on me.
Oh, it's awesome. Now. Yeah, I have major echo on me too.
It's fantastic. Now my echo is gone.
He's batting third.
Sam's freaking out. I can tell.
Number 16,
Manny Sam takes the stuff like Mota. Really personally. Like he'll beat himself up about this, but I can tell Sam's freaking out about this and calling various engineers.
Yeah, so now it's like a thing where nobody could hear what we were talking about. I still have a crazy echo in my ears.
Still do, eh?
Yeah. Well, I'll forge ahead.
You want to just tell some jokes? No, you shower and I'll show her. Then Cleopatra said, not now, I'm on my pyramid. Sit here and tell punchlines all day long.
Other than Seattle and Quebec and Las Vegas, was there one city that you would have been like giddy about if they had actually applied for an expansion team?
Well, Toronto would have made everything fun. Toronto would have just blown everything apart because then there's the indemnification with Toronto. Then there's what happens with Bell and Rogers. Where do you put a rink? Do you try to do something with the Air Canada? Like, Toronto would have been – like the storylines would have come out of another bid from Toronto would have been epic, to say nothing of the price tag. Because, you know, the $500 million entry fee to this club is just a suggested price tag. You can imagine the one for Toronto would be significantly higher.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, if you're the NHL, let me throw this one back at you. Right now, if you're the NHL, on a scale of 1 to 10, how thrilled are you that nothing came from a Toronto bid? Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. We don't need this headache right now.
Yeah, but don't you, I mean, do you ever think it's going to happen? Do you think the Leafs have too much influence?
Yeah.
You think it'll happen?
I think it will. And, you know, I'll tell you what. As Bob McCowan calls it, the unholy alliance between Bell and Rogers. Yeah, the unholy alliance. Can we see this lasting for decades upon decades? Or can you see a scenario where there is a split and one side buys the other out and one owns the Maple Leafs and the other owns the expansion team?
It'd be so great. It would be beyond great if it happened. Beyond great.
Because then you have, you know, you have the, a whole other dynamic of Rogers versus Bell attached to it. Much like you used to have Molson and Carling O'Keefe with the Nordiques and the Montreal Canadiens.
I would have been really intrigued by Portland. What?
Why Portland? Why? Okay, I'm listening.
Demographically sound. And wouldn't it just been the greatest kick in the world if Seattle didn't apply for a team, but Portland did?
But Portland did. Good Lord. My guest is here, by the way.
All right. Joining us down the line is a guy who's going to educate us on this whole issue with the expansion application that wasn't, from our friends in Seattle. Jeff Baker is a columnist and a reporter for the Seattle Times, and he joins us here on the Merrick versus Wyszynski show. Jeff, it's me, Greg, and over there is Jeff Merrick, and thanks for joining us. The first question is an obvious question. What the hell happened? Why wasn't there an application for a team from Seattle?
Well, I mean, you can boil it down to one word, money. You know, we can talk about arenas all we want. We can talk about, you know, partnerships all we want. But the bottom line is none of these groups in Seattle, and there were three of them that were looking to bring a team here, none of them had enough money to get it done. None of them had financial commitments in place to the point where they could actually make a $500 million bid for a hockey team, to the point where they would actually risk losing $2 million in their application fee to make this bid, because they knew that they didn't have a $500 million lined up. And then that includes all three groups. And I think that's why you heard the NHL, in its press release yesterday, they sounded a little perturbed by the whole situation. And that's why, you know, after all the talk and all the time we've devoted to Seattle's interest in this thing, not one of those groups had enough money lined up or enough secured financial commitments lined up to get this thing done when they were put to the test.
You know, before you came on, Jeff, we were talking about the NHL's preferred bid, if you will, from Seattle. Safe to say that would be the one from Victor Coleman trying to do the deal with Chris Hansen?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty safe to say. I think most leagues would prefer to be downtown as opposed to the suburbs. Now, would that be a deal breaker here? I don't think so. No, they want to be in this market ahead of the NBA above all else. So whether it was done in downtown in the Soto District or done in Tukwila or in Bellevue, I think the NHL would have, you know, taken a bid from either of those three and given it extreme consideration. But the bottom line is none of those groups could get it done. You know, we heard a lot of talk here. We heard a lot of talk about how this group had partners, that group had partners. I know that two of the groups thought they had partners, and they fell apart at the last minute, and that's why you didn't see any bids from Bellevue. It fell apart, I would say, about 9 days before the deadline. And in Tukwila, I would say Some stuff fell apart in the last few weeks, and that's why you didn't see an investment from there, because they were going to bid initially. And then in Soto downtown, Victor Coleman had let people know that he was going to be bidding. And then he had changed his mind at the last minute, probably like around last Wednesday or Thursday, ahead of the deadline. And so that shows you where these groups are at. They just don't have the commitments down. You know, you can talk all you want, but bottom line is when it's time to bid for franchises, you've got to have the money. It was put up or shut up time, and none of these groups got it done.
Is part of the dynamic with Coleman's bid the fact that he knows if the situation with the city council is ever straightened out and they release funding for an NHL first arena, that funding's probably not going to be at the same levels that it was for an NBA arena. Is it also the understanding that he's probably going to have to find some extra money for the arena on top of the expansion fee for this team?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him that. You'd have to ask Chris Hansen that. All I know is that they couldn't work it out. You know, bottom line is when they had to come up with $500 million, they couldn't get it done. And, I'm not saying this with any degree of impatience. It's not my money. It's not my I have no stake in this. But, I mean, you know, you can if you're going to talk and talk and talk for years, you have to have a plan when push comes to shove to be ready when a team is out there. And right now the plan in Soto downtown appears to be Chris Hansen, waiting to get an arena potentially, and then after that hoping to get his investors on board. Because after Steve Ballmer left about a year and 2 months now since Steve Ballmer left to buy the Clippers, Hansen has yet to produce any investor that's going to replace the dollars that he lost or show anybody or name anybody who's going to replace those dollars that were lost. His plan right now seems to be waiting to get an arena approved by city council here in Seattle, which is not going to be an easy thing. And then once that's approved, it looks like he's going to hope that the investors jump on board, which is the same thing that Ray Bartoszak is doing in Tukwila. He doesn't have any investors that he can show anybody, any real partners. And so it looks like he's hoping to get the arena approved and then hoping that other people will jump on board afterwards. Well, that's not a concrete arena plan. That's a whole lot of speculation, a whole lot of hope. Chris Hansen, to his credit, put a lot of his own money down on real estate in the Seattle area, something in the neighborhood of $100 million. But, you know, it's a risk to a point. Seattle real estate's gone through the roof. He's made money on that investment. So, it's not like he took that money and threw it out a window at a blind opportunity. I mean, that money's dedicated into real estate investments, and if he wants to, he can walk away, flip it, and walk away with a profit. So, when it comes to the bigger money we're talking about, $500 million, $1 billion, I mean, Coleman was supposed to be his hockey partner, but as we've seen, that hockey partnership hasn't resulted in anything yet because when it was time to put up the money, Coleman wouldn't do it. So that's no different from any other group in the Seattle area where they thought they had partners who were going to put up money, and in the end they didn't do it. Difference is Coleman's still here, says he's still sticking around, but until he actually writes a check, you know, you can talk all you want about sticking around. It's not going to matter.
Surprised the money's not there considering we're talking about the cradle of high tech in America?
Not really. No. I mean, Seattle likes to talk about how much money there is here, and there is money. I mean, let's face it. You got, besides Steve Ballmer, I mean, you got Paul Allen in this area. You got Bill Gates. I mean, you want to talk money. Bill Gates has the most money, of anybody in the world. But the problem is Bill Gates doesn't want to invest the money in sports teams. It's not a problem. He invested in a lot of philanthropic projects and other things that mean something around the world. A lot of people here, Jeff Bezos has money from Amazon, but they don't want to invest in sports. And so when you eliminate some of those big hitters, there's not a whole lot of people walking around Seattle with the kind of money that you need to make these kinds of projects work. And we hear talk that, oh, yeah, there's other people who want to jump on board. You can always get people for NBA, NHL. Well, that's great. Let's see them. Let's see who they are. And so far, not one of these groups has been able to produce any names or produce anybody who's going to step forward and write a check that's required to get the National Hockey League. So, I mean, you know, maybe they will. Maybe, you know, if the NBA offers an expansion franchise, maybe Chris Hansen will be able to line up a bunch of guys who can actually foot the bill, at $1 billion bill or whatever that's going to cost, and then get public money from Seattle City Council, public funding through bonds for the arena. But right now, that nobody's been able to do that. And so I understand, you know, I think the NHL's taken a lot of criticism about the expansion fee. I don't understand it, frankly, because you got two teams that are willing to pay the fee. So if that's the going rate, for an NHL expansion team, you got two teams that paid it. So the NHL didn't set the fee too high. It's the Seattle groups that weren't able to pay the price.
Jeff Bezos was willing to buy a newspaper before funding a sports team, which tells you everything you know, need to know about the solvency of the sports investment. Jeff, the new film, the upcoming film, Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice, is of course about how a group of people come together in the face of adversity to become a super team, the Justice League. So my question to you is, why can't all these Seattle owners just get together and buy a damn team with all the money they have?
Well, I think ego has a lot to do with it, frankly. That would be number one. I think there's people that want to get the credit for bringing the team here, whether it's Bartizak in Tukwila or Hansen in Soto or, you know, whoever the heck shows up in Bellevue. You know, I think that's been an issue up to now. I think control is another. I mean, look, these guys are private businessmen. They're not doing this for charity. They're doing this to make money. And so the more control you give up, the less money you're going to make in the long run. You know, what this should be is a wake-up call to some of these groups saying, you know, no matter how big your ego is and how big your profit desires are, you're letting opportunities go by the wayside if you really want to bring sports in here. And frankly, you know, I don't know that hockey's the greatest investment for Seattle. And you know, there's something to be said for that too. Just because they passed on it doesn't mean it was a bad decision by these groups. If they don't have the money to make it work, and they're not willing to ride it out for a few years with an NHL-only franchise until they get the NBA, you know, maybe they just aren't ready to have a team here. You know, maybe this market's already saturated with too many teams.
You know,
maybe that's why it can't pencil out.
That kind of dovetails to my next question here, Jeff, and that is, what has the reaction been in Seattle, the lack of a bid? And moreover, how much of an appetite is there really for hockey in Seattle then?
Well, I'll answer your second question first. You know, that is a big issue that people in Seattle, frankly, haven't discussed enough. I grew up in Montreal. I worked in Toronto for 9 years. You know, so I know what a hockey environment is like, and they don't have it in Seattle. They have a lot of junior teams here. They have good junior hockey history here. They have a potential rivalry with Vancouver that you know, should do really well. They've supported sports here in Seattle very well. When the teams are doing well, they've supported soccer here from the beginning, MLS. They've supported the Seahawks once they got going and are winning. I mean, they're the greatest fans in sports. And the Mariners, all they have to do is finish in third place, and that's usually good enough to draw fans out to the ballpark. So they're not a bad fan base that way. They're good at spending money here and going to games. The problem is you just don't hear the buzz around town about hockey that you do in other places. And I'm not saying it has to be like Montreal or Toronto. That's never going to work. It's never going to happen here. But, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs come on, and nobody's watching it in the bars. You see people watching NBA playoffs, you know, or they'll watch Major League Baseball, or they'll talk about Major League Baseball and NBA on TV, on radio. Hardly anybody here discusses hockey. You really have to search for it. So, yeah, there is a grassroots fan base of sorts here, but it's a very quiet one. And, you know, that's a key question because, you know, if the hockey team comes here and they're in last place, what's going to happen after a few years? Is the arena going to be half full? And then, you know, all your sports dollars are going to be siphoned off by the Seahawks, the Mariners, the football Huskies, the Sounders, you know, the women's NBA, WNBA team, the female version of professional soccer here. I mean, there's a lot of sports going on here. We're not the biggest city in the universe. You know, we're smaller than my hometown of Montreal when it comes to the actual city core. The greater area has about the same amount of people, but the greater area here is much more far-flung than in some cities. You know, you're talking about a city here that's probably half the size of Toronto. And, you know, we've already got all those pro sports and the equivalent of pro sports in college football that I mentioned. There's only so many sports you can support. So hockey's not the slam dunk that it's been made out to be here. It's going to take a lot of work. And if you're not ready to write a $500 million check right now, if you're dithering over the expansion costs, I got a question. You know, how prepared any of these groups are to make it successful here?
So the obvious follow-up to that is, if it ain't $500 million they're willing to ante up, would they be willing to ante up whatever it would cost to purchase the Arizona Coyotes or the Florida Panthers at some point? Is this actually just them saying, we can't hit the expansion fee number, but we could probably hit the relocation fee number?
Well, that's kind of been, and I forgot to answer the first part of your question because I rambled on so much about the second part. But no, I mean, the first part is people here view it that way, the way you just mentioned. They view it as, the NHL set the price too high, but, you know, if it was a relocation we'd be able to handle that. Well, first of all, the NHL didn't set the fee too high because two cities were willing to pay it. So the fee's right where it should be. That's the market. It's like buying, I told somebody that it's like buying a house here in Seattle or even better, buying a house in Toronto. You know, it's going to cost 3 to 5 times more than living in Arizona would, but that's the price you got to pay. If you want to live in Toronto or you want to live in Seattle, you got to pay the going market rate because people pay that rate here and they pay that in Toronto where I used to pay $700 a month just for my condo fees alone. It's expensive. Yep. But you want to live there, that's the price. So if you want to play in the NHL via expansion, that's the price, $500 million, because teams are paying it, cities are paying it. We saw that. Quebec City, Las Vegas, willing to pay it. Now, if you think you can get a relocation team, that's great. There's no teams being relocated right now. So, you know, that might happen in a year, maybe in 2 years, especially with the Coyotes, a situation I know very, very closely and have followed very closely. You know, it's entirely possible they leave within 12 months from now. But it's not guaranteed, you know. So, yeah, maybe they'll pay a lower rate. Maybe not. I can tell you right now, from what I've done, the research I've done, I have serious doubts that 2 out of the 3 Seattle locations would have been able to pay even a reduced relocation fee for the team. If it was $300 million, I don't even think they would have gotten it done in Bellevue, and I don't think they would have gotten it done in Tukwila. Would they have gotten it done in Soto? I don't know. Depends. You have to ask Chris Hansen and Victor Coleman what the magic number is if they're not getting public funding from Seattle City Council and from King County, because they're not for hockey. It's only for NBA. They need a lot more private money put towards this thing if it's for hockey only. So you would have to ask them. But I'd say 2 out of those 3 at a minimum wouldn't have been able to pay it as of right now. Maybe in 6 months they will, but right now I'd say no.
Jeff, last question for me. Maybe you just answered it, but I'll ask it again anyhow. How do you see, like, what does your gut say on the end game for this one? How does this conclude? Where does this go?
It's an excellent question. Look, I think the NHL wants to be here. I think the NBA wants to be here. And, you know, I don't think these three groups that I've talked about are incompetent by any stretch. I mean, they're run by intelligent business people. The problem is they just don't have their acts together yet. And that includes Chris Hansen. For all the work he's put in and all the land he's bought and all the progress he's gotten done on an arena, there's no guarantee that arena is going to survive a city council vote later this year. It's going to be very contentious. But not one of those groups has their ducks lined up. Not one of them has their acts together yet. Now, will they have it together in a year? That it's quite possible they will. But, you know, what you need from both sides now is you need to be sufficiently capitalized to begin with. And I don't think 3 different competing groups in this area is going to provide you enough capital to be significantly capitalized, whether we're talking NHL or NBA. So they need to get that. They need to get real investors in here who not just guys who are dithering and may commit, but guys who actually put their name on paper and are ready to go before you make an expansion application or a relocation application. And they have to get the arena situations resolved. I think Tukwila is probably going to get resolved by early next year. With Soto downtown, we don't know yet. It depends on whether it'll survive that city council vote, because the government locally in Soto, in Seattle, it hasn't been as cooperative as the government in Tukwila. And with Bellevue, they got to stop talking. They got to get something done. They got to, you know, as far as I know, they were starting to talk about a memorandum of understanding for an arena as recently as a few weeks ago, but that fell apart because an investor pulled out at the last minute. So, you know, they got to get the money lined up. They got to get the arenas lined up. And I think it's entirely possible all three groups could do that by some point next year. And then you start talking about getting a team here, because I think there is going to be interest from both the NBA and the NHL. They just don't have their acts together here yet. And it, frankly, that's why the NHL is so upset, because the NHL has been waiting about 2 years for the city to get its act together in one of these locations, and they haven't been able to do it yet.
Great stuff, man. And I guess finally for me is, what do you think about Vegas as an expansion city in the NHL? Obviously, the benefits and drawbacks are well documented. What's your take on Vegas as an expansion city?
Well, I think the attitudes towards gambling in Vegas are a little outdated, because you can gamble on the internet anytime, any day of the week that you want, in the comfort of your own home. You don't have to walk out to a casino to do it. Are there distractions in Vegas? Sure, but there's distractions in New York City. Believe me, there are. I've been out there. Plenty of distractions in Los Angeles. Just about anywhere you go in the world, there's distractions. So you got to have discipline as an athlete, and you got to get over it. I mean, if you're a gambler, you're going to gamble online. It doesn't matter whether you're in Las Vegas or not. So that's number one. Number two, I would say it has a distinct advantage over a market like Seattle in that there are no major professional sports being played in Las Vegas yet. So the dollars have not been saturated there the way they have for sports in Seattle. So that's not going to be as much of a concern. What would concern me in Vegas is the same thing that would concern me about Arizona is, you know, you've got to make sure you're not relying entirely on transplanted Canadians or entirely on transplanted visitors from places like Chicago, New York, you know, original six cities. You have to have a base of hockey fans in Las Vegas who are going to put up with the team after 2 or 3 years when the novelty wears off and if the team's in last place. I mean, that's going to be a real test. So, you know, if they're building it just to lure the tourist dollars, I have my doubts, just like I have my doubts about Arizona. But if they can get if they can find a core base of fans there who will come out win or lose, I think there is sufficient money in that market to make a team work. So I think it's a better investment than a lot of people around the country give it credit for.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the gambling thing being really sort of overblown. And especially in the sense that, like, I've heard people say, what about the visiting team players going to Vegas? I'm like, have you seen New York or Chicago? Like, you get into trouble in a number of different places.
Montreal. I mean, the home in Montreal because the players hit the bar still 3 o'clock every
Listen,
night. I mean,
I'll tell you guys this. There is a place in downtown Quebec City called Chez Dagobar, which was, as they called it in Quebec City, the extra attacker for the Quebec Nordiques. You know why their home record was so good? Because visiting teams would go to Dagobar and have 0 legs left for the next morning or the next day's game against the Nordiques.
That's true. And when any Canadian team goes to play the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers back to back, they have trouble sometimes. No matter how bad those teams might be, players hang out on the beach all day. They go out partying at night and then that's. That affects them for the entire road trip. It's not just a Las Vegas thing. Like I said, if you want to gamble in this day and age, you just gamble in your living room. Anybody can do it. Grandma can do it. You don't have to go to a casino.
I'm pretty sure there are some healthy scratches that have never actually made it out of Club Soupel Sex in Montreal.
I can tell you, you're probably very accurate with that statement.
All right, Jeff, man. Hey, thanks for all the time, man. This was really insightful.
Was,
I think you.
That was fantastic. Oh, my God. That was great, Jeff.
And I'll tell you what, I don't want to rain on Seattle's hopes here, but this is the situation. If you want to know why the NHL put out a press release that sounded that terse, that's why they did it. That's why they're that exasperated. Can the situation change? I think it will change down the road, but I'm a little surprised that neither of these groups have been able to get their act together yet. You can't take forever. You got to eventually, you know, make commitments and do something if you actually want to succeed in business.
But Jeff,
and they're just taking their time.
Jeff, seriously though, if you rained on anything in Seattle, would anybody notice?
Oh, wow.
You know what? We have had probably the nicest spring and summer in the country here. It's very unusual, and that's why I get on the Seattle Mariners sometimes. They complain for years they couldn't hit here. Because up until about July 5th, it always felt like it was March 5th here. But they have had perfect, almost summer weather, like beautiful conditions here. Going back to about April this year, the team still can't hit. And so, you know, people are trying to find reasons for that now. But we've had a gorgeous spring and summer here. The weather's just been unbelievable.
Great stuff, man. We'll have you back as soon as some other information on this stuff breaks in the coming months. And thanks for the insight, man. Really appreciate
it. That was fantastic. Thank you, Jeff.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
That was fantastic. Jeff Baker. You know what? Our buddy Patrick M, who stays very much on top of everything happening in Seattle because of what he does for a living, he tweets in, keep preaching, saturated sports market, weak ownership groups. This was a top-down push all the way.
And the Johnny G writes in, I thought this was interesting. He's like, I thought it was pretty well understood Seattle was getting a relocated team. I've seen people talk about this as if it's a given. And here's the issue with it. In an expansion process, yeah, you're paying $500 to get a team, but you're getting a team. You know what you're getting, and it's your team. Yeah. You can mold it and shape it any way you please. That's one aspect of it. But as far as relocation goes, we've had, three maybe in the last, 25, 30 years? Mm-hmm. What has it been? 30 years?
Minnesota, Dallas, Quebec to Colorado, Winnipeg to Arizona.
Five. We've had five, I guess, right? We had Quebec, mm-hmm. Quebec, Denver, Minnesota, Dallas, Winnipeg, Phoenix, Hartford, Carolina, and then Atlanta, Winnipeg. So I had five in like 30 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those, you know, were when Gary Bettman was but a young buck and didn't have the influence he has now. Bettman hates relocation.
Yes, he does.
You guys know there's one thing that you, that man, that little man doesn't like, which is admitting defeat.
Defeat's a little strong. He just likes to have all those markets and keep growing this thing. Right? Like when you go when you're the NHL and you go to sell nationally, they don't care who's watching or who's going to the games. They want to know what kind of footprint they get. And you better have all those markets.
But there's a difference between Atlanta and Phoenix. And there's a difference between Atlanta and Miami. Like there are certain teams in this league where he's done the legwork in trying to keep them solvent and trying to keep them in the markets they're in. I don't think he ever did that legwork with Atlanta, to be quite honest with you. But I mean, it's been blood and treasure when it comes to Glendale. And I mean, he's worked really hard to put Viola in place in Florida and everything else.
Part of that and brought in the CEO as well. Don't forget about that. Part of the issue I still think with Glendale is the NHL has not wanted to ever leave markets where communities build rinks for them. They don't want that to be the message to the marketplace. Build a rink and maybe we'll leave and maybe we won't. I still think they, in their mind, they used to consider it good business, and it is, to remain as loyal as you can until the very last moment. And Atlanta was there with that ownership group and the way they were splintered. Atlanta was there. They will not split if you buy them a rink. They will wait to the last possible moment and exhaust every single avenue if you buy an arena.
I guess my point is that there are no guarantees in relocation. And in fact, when it comes to a market that is a new market for the NHL, I mean, you know, Atlanta goes to Winnipeg because they know Winnipeg. They know what they get there. It's a Canadian market. They've been there before. The ownership group there is solid. All that jive. They don't want to move a team twice. And sorry, like if Seattle bombs, gonna have to move the team again. They ain't gonna fold it. So there's a lot more. There are a lot more variables involved in relocation than simply just you only have to pay half of what you'd have to pay for an expansion team, because there's many, 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 many fewer guarantees with relocation than there is with expansion. If you're in Seattle and you're like, $500 million, it's way too rich for our blood. We'll just wait until the team fails and they move it. You can move it to you. You don't think they'd move the Coyotes? They would move the Coyotes 100 times, no, 50 billion times to Toronto before they moved it to Seattle? Of course they
want the expansion money, thank you very much, from Toronto, which could be, by the time it happens, could be close to 1B.
They would love it, but let's say they're not. Let's say the next round of expansion is 10 years from now, and they got to move the Coyotes someplace.
I still think the final love letter Gary writes to the BOG is, here's a check for Toronto. That'll be the end of the legacy position written. Oh, man, just my guess.
So much. Every time I bring up that fantasy scenario of Toronto being in the West and the Leafs being in the East, and then they have to meet each other for the cup. That's the reaction. Every time I bring that up to a Canadian, they get wide-eyed and giggly like they just entered the Wonka factory.
Toronto used to be in the West. They used to be a Western Conference team once upon a time in the early 90s.
And you're like, you mean... The only team standing in the way of the Leafs winning is Toronto.
Hold on a second here. Fap. Wait a minute. How get me the Visine. I can't blink. Someone, quickly. Why is my skin so tight?
Oh,
why
my God.
Is my skin so tight?
It's you went all Rob Shrimp hearing about Hot Crossy.
Man, did that seem like a million years ago? Did that seem like a million years and about a dozen tech problems ago?
Well, Jeff hit us with a lot of information on the phone.
By the way, that was outstanding. Baker was just like knocking them down.
Well, I'll be honest with you.
That
man,
was
like,
really enlightening.
Really happy we had him on, because I was under the impression. I mean, I knew about the funding issues. Like they none of these groups had the funding in place to really make the $500 million happen, right? And I imagine part of the application process is, show us your cards. Do you actually have the money to do this shit? But I thought it was much more contingent on them not having the building. But it seems like, for him at least, for where he's standing, it's more about them not having the funding in place than it is about the arena.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, the thing about Seattle, though, is that, like, the NHL, one of the things the NHL doesn't want, I've been told this by a number of people, they do not want to have to play in Key Arena
for a couple of years before they go to
a
new building.
No, I've heard that too. I've heard that too.
Yeah. So.
I mean, at the end of it, you may have to just plug your nose and say, ugh, it's not perfect, but we'll do it for a while, for a year or so. But you're right. If they had their druthers, they would not want to do that at all.
I just referenced this line the other day in something I was writing. I'll do it here again. As the great Bruce Springsteen once sang in Thunder Road, you ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right.
How come Springsteen always got a free pass on Hungry Heart?
About how terrible it is?
No, about how horrible it is.
Right.
Like, if a rapper sings about like leaving his wife and kids, going off and doing his own thing, he's a terrible person. But hang on, got a wife and kids in Baltimore, Jack. I went out for a ride and I never went back. Like a river that don't know where it's flowing, I took a wrong turn and I just kept going. What? You abandoned your family and we're all singing along? Like, this is great.
Glory days.
Okay, I'll go along with, I guess I've been to a number of Springsteen shows.
Well, I mean, I obviously, you know, absolve myself of any criticism of Springsteen. It's legally not allowed for people who are
being
born
from
here.
New Jersey.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I love Bruce as much as the next guy. I've been to about a dozen shows, but still, that Hungry Heart's always been, really?
Ask yourself how many Torontonians have ever criticized Wendell Clark, and you'll understand the Springsteen-Jersey dynamic.
How dare you? No Torontonian, no right-thinking Torontonian. And one right-thinking man in Ottawa as well goes by the moniker, Down Goes Brown.
Would not surprise me to see Seattle get the relocation at some point, to be honest.
Let me ask you this.
Don't depend on it, is all I'm saying.
Let me ask you this question. You always look for motivation from the league in these types of situations. We know the motivation for Las Vegas. The NHL clearly wants to be the first major sports league into Las Vegas. The feeling being that first in wins. So I get that. And they've been chumming the waters with the awards for a number of years and cozying up and sort of, you know, providing as soft a landing pad as possible for hockey in Nevada. What do you think the motivation for being in Seattle is, though? Is it just cozying up the high-tech money?
No,
is that what it is?
No. They like the demographics in Seattle. I think, you know, Jeff talked about the whole is it a hockey town thing, and the way that the NHL sees it is that it's pretty much if you build it, they will come. It isn't a place where you walk into any bar and there's a hockey game on. There's very few places in the States that are like that before they get a hockey team. I bet you could probably say the same thing about Columbus, or Nashville, or any number of places before they got a team there. And now those markets are hockey markets, and that's just kind of how it works. In Seattle's case, the NHL sees it that way. They see it very demographically advantageous because they've got a young, rich collection of people that live there. Yeah. And the other thing, too, is they see it as geographically advantageous. It's an immediate rivalry with Vancouver, a blood rivalry with Vancouver. I mean, it's a local rivalry, to be honest with you. And then it also puts a team on the West Coast. So they love the geography of it. They love the demographics of it. There's a lot of reasons why they've been drooling over Seattle as a market for some time. I thought you were going to ask me what they see out of Quebec City. And quite frankly, the only thing I can think of is expansion money. That's it.
That's it.
Because like you always say, you're not making any new fans.
No, exactly. Yeah. If you're trying to create new hockey fans, you are exactly creating zero by putting another team in Canada. Now, you'll make more money. Absolutely true. You'll probably have a team that'll contribute to revenue sharing as opposed to having to benefit from it. Mm-hmm. But if your job is to grow the game, make more fans, you're not doing it by putting another team in Canada. I'm saying that as telling you that as a Canadian. And moreover, okay, Canadians never look at it this way. I'm sure Americans do. If you're an American owner, let's say you own, Greg, you own the Philadelphia Flyers.
Okay.
Do you have an easy time or a hard time selling a ticket when the Quebec Nordiques come to town as opposed to the Boston Bruins or the New York Rangers?
That's always been the case. That was actually one of my arguments about putting a team in Ottawa. Is no one knows anything about Ottawa. Ottawa is never going to be a thing where, you know what? No one really grinds my gears. Ottawa.
But if they won, though, they would grind your gears. The capital
you think
of
so?
Canada?
Even in the States?
The capital of Canada? Nah, probably not. Toronto's one.
I mean, and that's the same problem in some cases with Edmonton and with Calgary. But, I mean, there's always going to be the exception to the rule. You give many shits about Edmonton when Gretzky's there and McDavid's there. That's for sure. And we gave many shits about Vancouver when they became
the dastardly villains of the National Hockey League fighting the poor defenseless Chicago Blackhawks. You know, then you care about them when there's a reason to. But as a whole, like when you, I remember looking, I mean, when I was, you know, living here in Jersey and looking at the Devils' little, you know, fold up schedule and saying, you know, hey, Dad, which games should we get? Not Ottawa on a Tuesday. Oh, look, Buffalo on a Saturday, on a Thursday. Let's go to that one instead. You know, that's just kind of how you look at it.
Yep. So. See, Canadians never consider it from that perspective. Never. I can tell you for a fact they don't.
Yeah.
No. We don't. I shouldn't say they. We don't.
Sam, thanks for everything today. And if you could just now bring us.
Hang on. First of all, and I'm sure your young girl may have watched this TV show as well. Considering the amount of work that he did sliding down the fireman's pole and putting out the fire, can we now call him Fireman Sam?
Fireman Sam. That's
Fireman
fine
Sam.
By me. Yeah.
All right.
I like that.
Because he did a great job putting out that fire, bud.
That was a hell of a fire before. I don't even know what the hell happened there.
Huge.
Thanks, guys.
What's going on?
Sam, if you will, play the sound effect for the final segment of the show today, which is a Wednesday favorite, Going Postal.
Do you want to do a mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Is there a bar in Stouffville?
Hey.
That's always good.
Sick.
Travis Brown writes in, a growing number of Nashville fans want to see Shea Weber traded for a number one center. Is this a good idea, and what type of return do you think they could get?
You could get tons. I always have a positional bias. I've talked to you about it before. When you have a horse defenseman like that on your blue line, you don't get rid of him. It's got to knock your socks off. It's got to be Steven Stamkos. It's got to be that level of deal to make that happen. But my default position is no, and that's why they went and matched the offer sheet from the Philadelphia Flyers. Uh-uh. No way. No how. Find another way. Don't let go of Shea Weber.
Shits
that's
and giggles.
Me. What do you
shits
think?
And shits and giggles here.
Okay.
If you got Nugent Hopkins and Yakupov. Did you make that deal?
Nugent Hopkins and Yakupov?
For Weber.
And what else?
Okay. Weber and...
Daryl's kid with the curly hair, too. You throw him in the deal? Like
Weber and James Neal.
No, hang on a second. No, you need more from Edmonton.
You're saying that you need more than Nugent Hopkins and Yakupov for Weber?
100%.
All right.
For Shea Weber? Oh,
Nugent
yeah.
Nugent Hopkins, Yakupov, Darnell Nurse.
Getting warm, but still not there. He's getting there, but he's still not your bona fide number one center in the Western Conference in Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
You're getting a top six forward. You're getting an enigma. If I'm Nashville, I give serious thought to Nugent Hopkins, Yakupov, and Darnell.
No way, man. No thanks. You're giving up a killer. The guy shoots like McKinnis and hits like Stevens.
How old is he?
Want to get rid of that?
How old is he?
He's 2003 draft. So what's that? What's that in hockey years?
Getting up there.
Sorry, man.
Getting up there in years. No, not. You wouldn't do it?
No.
Interesting.
No, Shea Weber. No. You want a Roman Josi? We got a Roman Josi over here. You want to have a look at that? We got a Ryan Ellis. You want to look at a Ryan Ellis? No. Shea Weber? No. That's high stakes poker. You're clearly still playing Pai Gow.
Taylor Hall for Shea Weber, straight up.
Getting warmer.
Thomas Cook writes in, hey guys, was wondering what the coolest mask you guys have seen. What's the coolest story behind a goalie's mask that you have heard? Love the show. And go Preds, yet another Nashville listener.
Hey, you. Dougie Favell's was always funny. The pumpkin mask, we've talked about that on the podcast before. It was Philadelphia Flyers, I want to say 73. Doug Favell was starting. It was Halloween. And the trainer thought it'd be funny if they painted his mask all orange, like a pumpkin head. And that was the very first fully painted mask. Cheevers was the first to put paint on it, the stitches. But the first fully painted mask was Doug Favell. That's always... Simmons' Cobra mask was pretty sweet, too. That's a nice... Joel Gratton's Tiger mask. Dave Dryden's in Chicago, that cat one. That was sweet. John. Oh, and he freaking painted over it too. The goof. In Birmingham, John Garrett's bull mask was fantastic. Sorry, I'm monopolizing this one. His bull's mask was great. Go ahead, Wish.
No, I was enjoying listening to it. Who was it? I think it was... I want to say it was Steve Mason that did the zombie founding fathers mask.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
I am such a sucker for... Well, I'm a sucker for pop culture references, like when Kari Lehtinen had the Kill Bill mask in Atlanta. That was awesome. But I'm such a sucker for local iconography remixed in some way by the person with the mask. I'm a big fan of that. And obviously, I mean, Merrick and I being such easy lays for wrestling references, huge marks. Let's go marks. Huge marks for the Jason LaBarbera masks that featured, I think, CM Punk, The Ultimate Warrior, and a few others as well.
It's pretty sweet.
Brandon Griffin.
How about, do you like the ghost masks, just the plain white? Or the Scream mask of Mike Liut? I guess Liut predated Scream, but still.
I'll go the other way. I loved the murdered out all black mask that Jonas Hiller wore or does wear.
That was
so cool.
Yeah,
I know.
That's a good one. That's good.
All right, Brandon Griffin writes in, hey guys, very big fan of the show and both you gentlemen. I'm a writer and I've been building up my portfolio writing for various sites on various topics. I just got my first real exciting job writing about the St. Louis Blues. Congratulations. Which is my first big step to towards my dream job. What advice do you guys have for writing and reporting on an NHL team, and that team being your favorite? Oh, that's a good question. I didn't see that last.
That's
part
a good one now. For you. Okay, let me throw it at you. How did you do it? Being a fan of the New Jersey Devils, trying to cover the New Jersey Devils.
Obviously you have to be as objective as possible. But for me. And it really depends. Like if the gig you have requires you to treat this as a really standardized journalistic venture, then you need to divorce yourself from any emotion or any ties that you might have with the team. But I feel like journalism's changing a bit, where the knowledge you have on a subject is valued more than inherent bias. Like, I think there is more of a let the work speak for itself aspect of journalism now. That goes beyond simply, he used to have their poster on the wall. So I think that you can use your fandom in certain ways, because essentially you're writing for that audience. It's almost even easier for you to do that than it is for me. Because as a national guy, I can't just be a Devils homer the whole time. As a St. Louis Blues writer, if you're a St. Louis Blues fan, I've long said that the idea that being a fan is somehow a negative in covering a team is completely unfounded, because fans are always going to be the toughest critics of their own teams. Their standards for excellence are higher than any beat writers would be for a team.
Having said that, they do get their backs up when someone insults their team. It can go into protect the hive mode. And isn't that at loggerheads with what journalism should be?
It could be, but I'll also say that I think just as the lows are lower, the highs are higher. Like, I do think that there is, as a fan, sometimes a bit more of a, you know, like remember boys and girls, how excited your boy Wish was when Pavel Zacha got drafted? I'd probably look at that and say, oh, great, the Czech Travis Zajac. But I'm a Devils fan who's desperate for anything up the middle, so I'm treating him like he's going to be the next Ryan Getzlaff.
He's a good player.
Advice for our boy embarking into his journalistic career?
Further what I was saying about, you know, I still think you can be a fan, but not be. I mean, it always pains me when I see this, especially on Twitter, when people insult the team that the writer is covering, they come to their defense. If your first instinct when you hear criticism of your team, the team that you're covering, which happens to be a team that you enjoy, if your first instinct is to fire back and try to act as a Captain America shield for the team, then maybe it's time to take a step back and say, maybe I'm not ready to do this. If that's your first instinct.
Yeah. And the other thing, obviously, is you know, from a X's and O's standpoint, feel free to reach out to me or Jeff down the line for any career advice along the way. And that goes to everybody listening.
Yeah, follow my path. Great.
Dude, throw yourself into it. You are totally about to enter what is a life. It is a lifestyle choice, as we've often said in the show. You cannot dabble in it. You cannot treat it as anything but a full-time profession.
and simply know your beat better than the next guy.
Yeah, and here I will offer this. If what's the gentleman's name? I'm assuming it's a gentleman, right? Not a woman.
It is in fact Brandon J. Griffin.
Brandon, make Greg and I this promise. I've made this promise to myself, Greg. I'm not sure if you've made this promise to yourself as well, but make yourself this promise, because when you get into covering sports as your job, you get into it because you're a sports fan. Like, to your point about being a fan of a team, I'm a fan of hockey, right? That's what attracts me to it. When this stops being fun, when I stop enjoying hockey, when I stop enjoying watching hockey and the people in it and the conversations around it, when that stops, I have promised myself and everybody, I will leave. I will go away. I will not be that person, that cynical, hardened person who resents the game because it cost them a relationship with their spouse, a relationship with their child. It cost them stability in their life because you've chosen to do this. If you find yourself in a position where you have nothing but contempt for this sport, go away. You can be cynical. That's fine. You can be very critical. That's great too. But when you have nothing but contempt for it and the people involved in it, that's when it's time to go away. Because it's almost as if the game has offended you and ruined your life. If you believe that's true, it's time to say bye-bye. And you know who we're talking about. Greg, you know who we're talking about. And you see them everywhere.
Yep.
Right? You see them on the road. Yes, you read them on Twitter. The guys, you're like, man, really? I know that you've made some poor decisions in your life. And maybe this is the only thing that you know. And you resent that because you're bored of it. But don't take it out on everybody. Don't turn into that person.
Yeah, it's a real easy litmus test. It's just simply who's told Greg to F off in the press box before. It's usually those people that have lost their smile. All right, two more real quick. Mark Harris writes in.
I was going to say our buddy at Ryan Project. No question, but I work at Penguin Random House, so I am a random penguin, and I've said it more than once. Atta boy, Ryan. Random penguin Brilliant. Will never die on this podcast.
Here's a hockey thing that happened we didn't talk about. Mark Harris writes in, hey, fellas, Mark here. I'm sure you probably hit the topic of Craig Smith's contract in Nashville during the show. Nope. But with that, do you think that 20-goal scorers in this league are now worth $4 million a season? And then he asked about the president. Well, let's set on Smith for a second. I mean, I thought Lambert's piece on Craig Smith was great because
that was excellent.
He drew the comparison to Gustav Nyquist, and if you're going to do that, then I think the salary's not that outlandish, do you?
Yeah, I thought Lambert nailed it, and that was the one that line that you draw in that you say to yourself, well, there's no chance he's a comparable to Gustav Nyquist until you actually have a look at the numbers, and he is. And what do we keep saying on this show? Goals are expensive. Mm-hmm. Goals are expensive creatures in this league where the MO is to shut down offense and shrink the puck. Mm-hmm. Back-to-back 20-goal seasons, you cash in at the right time. And that's the going rate for back-to-back 20-goal scorers.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. We should touch on real quick Braden Holtby asking $8 million in the arbitration hearing with the Capitals, obviously going extraordinarily high because he wants
to ask the
chains a little bit. Yeah, you can ask. But again, you come off looking like an idiot. I mean,
do you? Why?
No rational person believes that he's $500,000 less than what Lundqvist makes against the cap.
No, but it's a negotiation. Now, do you think for one second that he thinks he's going to get $8 million? No. This is why I prefer baseball style arbitration over NHL. Because here the arbitrator sort of picks a number that's in between the two numbers that come in. The baseball style is everybody comes in with one number and the baseball arbitrator picks that number. So no one tries to hit a home run and no one tries to rip anybody off. Because the arbitrator look at it and say, okay, you're coming in too low, and hey, buddy, you're coming in too high. You're picking a number.
Arbitrations are already a very intense process and can be extraordinarily contentious. To me, like, the Capitals' offer of 5.1 is not as egregious as the offer of $8 million from Holtby. And there's a part of me that just says, now you're just dicking around.
Like, how many games did Holtby play? Didn't he play, like, all of them?
73 games. Oh no, he was great last season, and I think he's a top 10 goalie in this league. But what is that worth?
Because I think
it's worth probably. You see, the question now becomes: you can't use Pekka Rinne's contract in the arbitration because he signed it's a UFA contract. Yep. But you can use it in a contract negotiation with the Capitals, and there's some comparisons to be made here. What Holtby's, the numbers Holtby has put up versus the numbers that Rene put up in the same sort of four-year period, and Holtby didn't have Suter and Weber playing in front of him. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna guess maybe like 6.3 is where it comes in.
How about you give
which
him?
Which sounds Crawfordish.
You give him 7, but 1 million of it has to go to Mitch Korn.
True that.
Out of his hotel room. Well, it's true, right? Like, yeah. What's been the big difference? How Mitch Korn quieted game.
A million goes to Mitch Korn, and a million goes. It's hush money for Olaf Kolzig, so he doesn't try to meddle again. Finally, Shane Clausing writes in.
All right.
Ron McLean, venerable, lovable Ron McLean,
yep.
In a Sportsnet Q&A article today, said he could see the Oilers winning a Stanley Cup in the next 2 years and at max 4 years. Do you think the Oilers have a chance to make the playoffs this year and win a cup in the next 2 years?
Pieces are there. Players are coming. Trades will be made. You're starting to see depth in the organization at every single position. My only question is the goaltending. Forwards are going to be fine, thank you very much. And I think down the road, you know, with Darnell Nurse and Oscar Klefbom, Andre Sekera is a nice signing as well. Is it a murderer's row on the back end? No, it's not. So you probably still need some help there. But now with McDavid there, I can, because now all of a sudden, you know, to Ron's point, you have a Pied Piper. Now all of a sudden, Edmonton is a destination point because, holy shit, we can win a cup here. We have Connor McDavid and Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Jordan Eberle and, you know, go down the list. Like, we've got some players here. We've got a coach. We've got a general manager. We've got a vision. We've got a direction. We've got fans. We've got a new arena. Temperature's not great, but what the hell? You're winning hockey games and you're driving in, you know, you're going from the hotel to the lobby to the limo to the rink. So what does it matter if you got to wear a parka? I honestly could see this happening pretty fast for Edmonton. Do they make the playoffs this year? Ooh, don't know about that. But next year? Yep. But then listen, stay healthy and have a couple of key injuries elsewhere. That is a lot of points to gain, Grant.
I'll say this though, man. Like, one name you didn't mention is Peter Chiarelli, and the bottom line is that guy built a champion. You can say what you will about, oh well, Chara, blah blah blah, 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 blah.
But he got him.
But how many times in that championship season did we refer to the blue collar grunt like soldiers that the Bruins had in their lineup, and oh, they do all the dirty work for that team? That's the kind of thing that Edmonton needs, and I have the utmost confidence that Peter Chiarelli plus an analytics department that may just be one guy are going to be able to find players that will form the backbone of a championship team behind what could be an offensive juggernaut.
You know,
and that's why I think that there's a I don't think 4 years is outlandish. I think 4 years is realistic for this team to win a cup.
Lander in is the third spot. We'll see what happens to Leon Draisaitl, and he may be used as a trade chip. He may just be a winger. I don't think that he's going to be a centerman unless they do something with, you know, Connor McDavid or Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and I don't think that they will. McDavid's going to get a lot of headlines, and rightfully so. The players they brought in will get headlines, and not as much as McDavid, but still rightfully so. You know, it was a great, you know, to your point about building, you know, sort of gritty, gutty teams of skilled players that work their balls off. Mark Letestu is in as a fourth-line center with the Edmonton Oilers.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And you know,
that's good.
It's become too easy to shit on Chris Kelly and too easy to shit on Gregory Campbell and too easy to shit on Ferentz now versus Ferentz back when the Bruins won. And I'll give you the best example for what I'm looking for out of Chiarelli vis-a-vis winning a cup in the next 4 years, the Mark Recchi. That glue applied to that team when it's ready. And I think Chiarelli's just the type of guy to find that kind of player, to find that last piece kind of guy. Second best acquisition for the Oilers this summer was Peter Chiarelli.
What, after Sekera? Or grab a
Yeah, after Sakari. I was waiting. I was trying to give you as much runway as I could to figure out where that was going to
go. Okay. I was kind of like, okay, where's Wish going this one? How can I be a jackass with the follow-up?
I'm waiting for it. I'm holding up the pinata for you.
It's very serious. Yeah, I'm going to take the mask off and swing at this one and make it nice and easy for myself. Oh, here come the candies. I got to grab. Right, I got a Sakara.
Listen, kids, we've once again given you an hour and a half of free entertainment. All we ask is that you treat us with the same amount of respect and reverence that you always do on Twitter. At Jeff Merrick, at Wyszynski. This, unfortunately, I mean, we've given you now 3 hours in 2 weeks, which is pretty good for the summer.
That's better than the winter.
Unless Jeffy's got something up his sleeve in the next 2 weeks, there'll be no MVSW for at least the next two weeks.
Do you want to say what you're doing? Are you at liberty?
I don't know yet. My better half might not be all that cool with me spilling deets on where we're going.
I'm just gonna say it. Greg Wyszynski is taking over Bill Simmons' spot at ESPN.
You kidding me? I'm already kissing his ass to see if we can get an HBO.
Kiss his ass, call it ice cream.
We're heading out on vacation, me and Ruby. So we'll be away for a bit, and
that's awesome.
And then we'll be back.
And happy for you guys. It's great.
If at liberty to say where we're going, I'll tell you. It's a fun. Not your destination, and it should be a good time.
Just tell us when you get back. Don't tell anyone where you're going. Just tell us when you get back.
Yeah.
Bring some of the culture. You know, get out there. Be like the amateur anthropologist. You know, like wear the hula skirt, eat the can of worms, like the whole deal. Just go on.
Oh, that's
and,
so
and
much
take
fun.
A cultural bath.
Oh my God, that would be so much fun. That like do it like a clue a day.
You're like Margaret Mead. Yeah. Oh, you know what? Yeah. Do that on Twitter. Every day one clue. It was like where's Wish. Every day, one clue on Twitter.
That's too funny.
Do it, bud.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
It.
That's not a bad idea.
The winner gets a shout-out on the podcast.
What I wish I could do is I wish at some point... I wish I would have worked it where one of our listeners sent me a photo from the inside of another of our listeners' houses. And, like, clue two is something from inside their house. And it's like, the call is coming from inside the house. just freak the shit out of somebody.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is all right. Well, thanks to my mom and dad for letting me use their wood paneled basement. I'm about to tweet something about my dad that's amazing.
Oh, yeah?
So you just have to stay tuned
is
for that.
Is it about what's it, the bull and steer? The
no,
and
hogs
what's
and heifers
clothes.
No,
hogs
it's not about
heifers.
That. Hogs, yeah. No, it's actually... you'll just have to see it. It's a membership card that he has for a special society. And that's about it. Thanks, everybody, for a great show. Thanks to Jeff, Jeff Baker
from
Seattle Times.
Yeah, he was great. Now, hang on. Are you, like, going through your dad's old cards in his desk drawer?
No.
Tweeting out old, like...
It was just like flying
Playboy,
out there.
Playboy Club memberships or, like, the Margarita Club memberships. What are you
talking? It's not like that. It's just... It looks like a collection of cards that maybe used to be in his overstuffed Costanza wallet, and then
he took them
out. And here I'm gonna tweet this now. This is my.
Does he have like any like Trader Vic's cards or anything like that?
Proud. Hold on.
This old vintage.
Okay. All right, I'm tweeting it now. It is his Maker's Mark ambassador card.
How exactly does one become a Maker's Mark ambassador? You just get drunk on Maker's Mark in public?
He is. I don't know, but he is an official ambassador.
Look at that,
Maker's Mark.
Oh, this is actually okay. I thought this was like a vintage card. This is new because there's a website attached to it. There's a .com.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was like something from like 1983. Like you're part of the Kiss Army. You've got an old card.
Yeah,
wow.
There it is.
So hang on. What's barrel number mean?
I think that he actually has his own barrel of whiskey there. I want to see how it works.
So hang on. So you go there and they'll pour you a bottle of whiskey from the barrel that you've already bought?
I don't know.
That if that's true, that's too sweet.
Just too sweet. Mm.
Hey, you take care of your fingernails pretty nice too, eh?
Thanks, man. Also want to say congratulations to my good friend, and by that I mean we met once in the Olympics, Adrian Wojnarowski, who signed a new 4-year deal worth $5 million plus with Yahoo to stay on and
be the best damn basketball writer
in the business.
I know sweet tweet about basketball, but the one thing that I do know when I talk to basketball dudes especially at the draft, right, where this guy nails it, you know, 5 minutes before it's announced. I remember being in Philadelphia at the draft, NHL draft last year, and we, me and a couple of guys from Sportsnet were watching the NBA draft, and he had everything, like, at least 5 minutes before it was announced.
Yeah.
Dude is dialed in.
He's ridiculous. He's actually from Jersey, so we've got that going for us, which is nice. And he used to work, I think, for the Bergen Record. And so we sat on a bus, and I think we took the bus back from one venue to another during the Olympics. And a nice, really nice conversation. Only time I've ever met the man. We are aware of each other. But it felt, you know what it felt like? It felt like an extra on the set of Lincoln taking a bus back with Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, it was that so far out of my league as far as, like, accomplishment, talent, insiderness.
Hey, Woj, have you seen Jersey Fouls?
Like, you know, like, did you ever notice how they always run out of turkey jerky in the Yahoo commissary?
What's up with that? What happened to all those builder bars they used to have? What happened to those?
He's like, I don't know. Someone just brings me food every day.
Oh my God, imagine that. I'd sit in my office breaking stuff and people just show up with food.
Like, I break stuff too. I bump into things. That's all I got.
That's right. When news breaks, you fix it. So we know about you, Wish.
Thank you, everybody. Great stuff. And apparently Ray Shiro gave Dikembe Mutombo his own Devils jersey. By the way, read my Q&A with John Hines on the site today. I did a Q&A with the Devils coach. Seems like a real straight shooter.
Guy looks intense.
He does. He looks like an intense sort. Also, very unwilling to say he's going with the kids this year. Kind of just saying, we're going to go with whoever gives us the most effort, blah, blah, blah. Also, doesn't really seem to have an idea on how Patrick Eliash fits, but then again, who does?
The Devils' Daniel Alfredson, Patrick Eliash?
Something like that. It could be the Devils' Matt Sundin, too. Guy doesn't want to leave.
Could be.
Yep. Oh, but I saw Ray Shiro, and it was fantastic. Steve Pilati, my friend at the Star Ledger, wrote a story about how Devils' camp was different this year because the shades were pulled up around the rink so people outside could actually look in and see the practice, unlike what Lou used to do, which is close the shades so no one outside can look into the gigantic windows. And I mentioned Cheryl Ray, you know, knows me by face, which is great. And he's like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, it's going well. How's your son? I'm like, hey, it's just really good to talk to the man who raised the shades on Devil's Practice. It's just like, he unleashed the biggest eye roll and basically said, you know, I wasn't trying to blaze a trail or anything, man. I just kind of wanted the shades up.
One, people see hockey like, hey, there's Pavel Zacha and Damon Severson's over there. You want to come out and see some of these players? I don't know, it's kind of like an ad. I don't know. Good stuff. As opposed to close the curtains, go buy a ticket.
All right. That's it, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks, everybody. And by the way, I think we're leaving at the right time because Jeff and I were putting our heads together thinking about what we were going to talk about in the show, and if it wasn't for the expansion deadline, it would have been an hour on Craig Smith. So maybe it's time for all of us to back away from the hockey for a few weeks.
Tweeting pictures from Greg's dad's wallet. That's what that would have been.
Here, I'll give you. I'm about to give you another picture you're going to love in a second. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and talk to you soon. Take care. Bye. Thank you.